Game on the line. Rapino will strike. Rapino scores. 2-1 U.S.
Well, the U.S. was a little nervous there yesterday. I know fans were that were watching. I, over my lunch break, had a chance to watch the end of that match between the U.S. and Spain. And with Spain almost pulling off the upset and having a chance to do so, but a penalty on Spain within the box there in the 75th minute is when Megan Rapinoe hit that goal to give the U.S. the win in the end. 2-1 the final. Obviously didn't give them the win right away, but it did give them the win eventually. Megan Rapinoe scored both goals, and they were both on penalty kicks, as the U.S. again winning it 2-1 to advance to the quarterfinals of the Women's World Cup. They'll face France coming up on Friday at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the host team, the France squad. So it'll be interesting. I think that's what everybody was kind of looking forward to when this World Cup started on the women's side, was U.S. and France in the quarterfinals, because they were both predicted to win their groups and did so, and have rolled into the quarterfinals now in the Women's World Cup. Welcome into the Sports Ticket here on Kitty Country 94. It is 9-11 here on this Tuesday, June 25th. Coming up in the Sports Ticket, we'll take a look at the NBA awards that were announced last night. MVP, Coach of the Year, Sixth Man, et cetera. We'll go through all those awards and tell you who won them. Also, the Kansas City Royals are back in action. A game that was delayed a little bit, but they did finish against the Indians, ended up losing 3-2. More on that. And also, Riley Gates of GoPowerCat.com will be joining us later in the show to talk K-State sports, football recruiting, heating up, and also Bruce Weber will be coaching the Under-19 World Cup team coming up starting at the end of this week. This weekend on Saturday is when that starts. And then also we'll talk a little bit about some men's basketball notes and basketball recruiting in general as well. So a very busy time, actually, and a lot of stuff to talk with Riley about here today coming up here during our Wildcat Insider segment with GoPowerCat.com's Riley Gates. So stay tuned for that. We go through this. Last night, the College World Series, National Championship Series, beginning in Omaha.
Criswell winds, and the pitch on the way. Hit on the ground, over towards shortstop. Blomgren's got it, throws to first, in time for the out, and the Michigan Wolverines win game one. 7-4, Michigan is one win away from their first national title since 1962.
Michigan, again, winning that. Michigan softball team has won some national titles here recently, but at least one anyway that I can recall off the top of my head. But it's been a while since the baseball team has had this kind of success again. They can wrap up that championship tonight. You just heard they're one win away from their first national championship since 62, as they will take on Vanderbilt tonight. Game two in that best of three series is at 6 o'clock from TD Ameritrade Park in Omaha, so we'll keep an eye on that and give you an update tomorrow on how that all plays out. Should Michigan win, and again, they are the national champions. Should Vanderbilt win, they would force a deciding third game coming up on Wednesday night from Omaha. So again, we'll keep an update and keep our eyes on the College World Series National Championship Series. Okay, and the Royals last night, is a very up and down game, I guess you could call it, in a very long game in the end due to a rain delay, but this is how it ended up.
He fires. Kipnis with a drive to deep right. There she goes. Ball game. Jason Kipnis with a walk-off home run to right. The Indians have their fifth walk-off win, their third via the home run. And once again, Jason Kipnis delivers.
So Jason Kipnis hitting the walk-off to give the Indians the win. They're now 43-35 as the Royals fell to 27-52 with the loss. It was a 6 o'clock start time, but the game didn't get over until after 11 o'clock. There was about a 3-hour and 23-minute rain delay there in Cleveland. And what that did was really hamper the Royals' chances of finishing off with a great pitching performance. And it just seems like when things can go wrong, they will for this Royals team. And you get the rain delay, and that comes in. And right when Brad Keller's really probably having one of his better performances of the season, he had gone three innings and given up just three hits, no earned runs, and struck out four on 40 pitches. But again, with that rain coming in and the three-hour-plus rain delay, obviously you're not going to send him back out there and risk any injuries for him. So he's pulled immediately, anything more than about a 10-15 minute rain delay is probably going to be like, yeah, you're out of here. That's just the way it is in baseball. And a tough break there for Keller again. He was having a really, really good start. Again, three innings, three hits, four strikeouts in that time. So a great start there. But the Royals did take a lead right before the rain delay hit, though, to put them on the board and give them a chance in the game.
Houston leads all American leaguers with 33. Hit pretty well. Go left ball. Center field.
Go and ball.
That ball is going to be gone. A home run for Whit Merrifield, and the Royals take a 1-0 lead.
So Whit Merrifield gets the hit there, and also Whit Merrifield was the first player in the major leagues to hit 100 hits on the season, as a great accomplishment there for Whit. And the last Royals player to do that was George Brett, as far as the first in the majors to get to 100 hits. And again, Whit did a fine job. He became the first major leaguer this year to hit 100 hits, going 2-for-5. He led the majors with 192 hits last season over his last 13 games. He's batting .351 with 5 doubles, 4 homers, and 13 runs. So a big performance there for Whit Merrifield. Also, looking at that game, Merrifield got that homer, but after you pull Brad Keller after the rain delay, then things started turning a little bit south for the Royals. Two straight runs from the Twins, one in the fourth and one in the sixth, gave them a 2-1 lead as Brian Flynn came in relief there, pitched 3 2/3 and gave up 4 hits, 2 runs, walked 2 and struck out 3. But again, Brad Keller was doing so good on the mound before that rain delay hit, and then the 2 runs given up to give Cleveland a 2-1 lead. Nicky Lopez doubled the center in the eighth to tie it up and send it to extra frames, and then you heard Kipnis with the home run, the walk-off variety to finish it off there for the Indians. So the Royals, like I said, just seems like if something bad can happen to Kansas City here this season, it will. And again, as you're cruising along, having a great start for Brad Keller, then the rain comes and everything kind of changed. Willie Peralta, by the way, the one that gave up that home run there for the Royals. And Willie's he's been up and down this year, but he's got a 4.91 ERA with just one save. And so far this season, he's had 34 appearances for the Royals. And again, the one save, he's 2-4. As far as his record is concerned, he's blown 3 saves. So, Willie's had a rough season at times for the Royals. But again, he's not alone in that realm for Kansas City. So next up for the Royals, they continue their 3-game series. The Indians tonight at Progressive Field. Glenn Sparkman, 2-3, the 3.62 ERA, starts for the Royals against Shane Bieber of the Indians. 6-3 of the 3.86 ERA. First pitch is at 6:10 tonight from Cleveland and Progressive Field for the Royals and the Indians. Adalberto Mondesi still out right now for the Royals with the injury. He is expected to come off that 10-day injured list, though, on June 29th when he's eligible. Again, he was put on the shelf following the June 18th game against Seattle, so Adalberto Mondesi expected to be back. So good news for the Royals there that that's not a long-term issue for Kansas City. Kind of looking at the Royals last night, they had just 5 hits in that loss to the Twins. Hunter Dozier's been back in the lineup but went 0-for-4 last night. Jorge Soler 0-for-3. Gordon went 0-for-3 with a couple strikeouts for the Royals. He did get on base with a walk at one point there. Gordon's batting average now down to .261 after another 0-for-3 performance last night. So, again, we're just kind of seeing Billy Hamilton at the bottom of the lineup. But last night went 0-for-4. With a couple strikeouts as well. The Royals struck out 8 times in that loss and just really couldn't muster up the offense they needed in the end to be able to get a win over the Indians on Monday night. Again, they move on Tuesday tonight to take on the Indians in game 2 of 3. Well, as we mentioned at the start of the sports ticket here, the NBA awards were announced. But first, there's one other kind of obscure baseball thing I want to get to before we do that. You don't always hear a lot about this happening in the sporting world, but according to sources, Mets general manager Brody Van Wagenen reportedly dictated Mickey Callaway's in-game management from his home. He was said to have removed ordered Callaway to remove Jacob DeGrom from a June start from his house and dictated that to Mickey Callaway. Mickey Callaway, by the way, has been in the news there in New York, as well as former Royals pitcher Jason Vargas, for an incident that they had with a reporter after the game in the interview room there a couple days ago. They've both been fined for some of the things that they said, and I'm going to go over that a little bit more coming up in our interview with Riley Gates, because I have an interesting question for him, off-the-wall question that we'll get to, but we'll go over that a little bit more. But Mickey Callaway, he's been under some heat here. That basically what happened the other day was they told one of the reporters, told him, we'll see you tomorrow, and Mickey Callaway thought he was being sarcastic, apparently, at the end of the press conference, said, we'll see you tomorrow, and Callaway goes out and says, don't be a smart A about it, and apparently felt he was slighted by what the reporter said, see you tomorrow, felt it was sarcastic or something of that nature, and he wasn't real apologetic the next day about it, but then finally came back and readdressed the situation and then finally apologized on his probably second or third chance to do so. And then Jason Vargas had some words as well there in the clubhouse. But so that's already, you know, one of the things we're hearing about the Mets. And then this comes out where the Mets and general manager Brody Van Wagenen dictating Mickey Callaway's in-game management. The New York Mets already embroiled in controversy stemming from that confrontation that we mentioned between Mickey Callaway and Jason Vargas that they had with a reporter following Sunday's loss against the Marlins. Yet Callaway may soon have to answer questions about something else. As we said, general manager Brody Van Wagenen calling shots from his home during games, according to Mike Puma of the New York Post. It was Van Wagenen who ordered for ace Jacob DeGrom to be removed from a game earlier this month after his hip cramped up. And the source said Van Wagenen, who was watching the game at home on TV, communicated with a member of the Mets support staff with an order to remove DeGrom from the game. Callaway complied with the order, and DeGrom was visibly upset as he departed the field, certain that he could continue pitching. The manager was grilled for the move, but at the time insisted the decision was his. And Puma adds that the clubhouse was displeased with Van Wagenen failing to take responsibility, for the move, as it fueled public belief that DeGrom has a beef with Callaway. It should go without stating that it's unusual for a GM to interfere during a game like Van Wagenen is alleged to have done. This is Van Wagenen's first season as a GM there. Previously had a player agent representing DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard, among others, as he was an agent representing those guys. Callaway, meanwhile, his second season on the job, again, for the Mets. So, interesting. You don't hear about that a lot, so where a general manager dictates the decisions in the game. Let's say you're actually at the game, you're up in the your box, up in the press box or wherever you have your owner or GM box or wherever you're sitting, maybe call down then. But you're watching the game on TV and you called in and said, hey, take DeGrom out, we don't want to risk injuring him. Not quite sure if I've ever heard of that one before, but that's what reportedly has happened with the Mets in their general manager, Van Wagenen, to Mickey Callaway, their manager. So we'll see. I wonder if Dayton Moore has ever done that to Ned Yost. I got a feeling their relationship's a little bit better, to where Dayton just lets Ned do what he does on the field and they'll worry about it after the game's over, instead of calling up and saying, hey, Ned, Keller doesn't have it tonight. Take him out. You can tell he's laboring. Take him out from the couch at your house in Kansas City. Dayton Moore says, take him out of the game. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. So maybe it happens more than I would think. Maybe it actually has happened with the Royals. But that's a new one that I don't know that I've heard of, calling from home. And I've probably heard of general managers, you know, getting their hand in there and saying, hey, you need to do this, even during a game. But interesting to do it in-game management for the GM from his house during a Mets game. Well, again, we'll have more on that Mets skirmish coming up later here in the show on Katy Country 94 and Waterside. Wake up. All right, as we mentioned, NBA awards were given out last night.
The 2019 Kia NBA Most Valuable Player goes to Giannis Antetokounmpo.
So Giannis is the MVP of the NBA, and we're going to kind of go through the numbers and see that the three finalists for the MVP were Giannis Antetokounmpo, James Harden, and Paul George. And all three of these players were certainly great candidates to be the MVP. James Harden, if you don't remember, was the MVP last year. This year, again, it goes to Giannis as he got 78 of the first place votes compared to just 23 for last year's MVP Harden. And, you know, you always look at the player comparisons and some of the things that you can keep an eye on. James Harden won the MVP last year and averaged 30 points a game, 30 and a half. Also averaged 8.8 assists, 5.5 rebounds a game. This year, though, he led the league in scoring with 36 points a game and just kind of off the charts. He did shoot just 37% from three as he actually attempted 13 threes a game. He went about 5 of 13 on average from three-point land here this season. So a lot of threes were put up. He played in 78 games and started all 78 of those games he played in for Houston. Again, he averaged 36 points a game. Now, his assist numbers were a little bit down, 7.5 compared to just about 9 last year. But his rebounds were up by 1 and some change at 6.5 rebounds a game here this season. So you kind of look at that and understand, well, the Rockets had the best record in the league last year. They did not this year. They were the number 4 seed out of the Western Conference. But Harden was not at fault for that. He was the unquestioned leader of that team and, again, averaged a career-high 36 points a game. So he continues to get higher on his average each year. He averaged 29 back in 15-16 with the Rockets and went up to 29.1, then 30.4, and then this year all the way up to 36.1 points a game for the Houston Rockets. So James Harden had a great season, but he's not the MVP. It goes to Giannis Antetokounmpo. When you kind of compare that, Giannis actually had the lowest scoring average out of all three of the guys that were finalists. Paul George was outstanding this year. He just blew away his career high for points per game on average this season at 28, and he also averaged 8 rebounds a game, but just 4 assists, but he did average a little over two steals, which led the NBA at 2.2 this season. So Paul George obviously had a case. He's playing there in Oklahoma City with Russell Westbrook, who can score the ball as well, and even with that fact, he averaged 28 points a game and, again, 8 rebounds, 4 assists for the Oklahoma City Thunder. But again, Oklahoma City was 6th in their conference there in the West. So the reason I say those things about Houston finishing 4th in the West and Oklahoma City finishing 6th in the West is because Giannis Antetokounmpo played for the best team in the NBA during the regular season. Now, that didn't play out as far as a championship was concerned, as they were defeated by the Raptors in the Eastern Conference Finals. But Giannis had an outstanding season this year. He also had his career best average in just his 6th season in the NBA. Averaged 27.5 points over that here this season, 12.5 rebounds. So there's one of the biggest things that you'll see in the difference between Giannis, Paul George, and James Harden is that Giannis did average a double-double at 27.5, 12.5 rebounds, and 6 assists a game to go along with a block shot and a half per contest. He shot from the floor overall this season. He shot about 58%, so it was pretty efficient in his shots as well. Obviously doesn't take as many three-point attempts as you see from Harden. He only averages about 3 attempts from 3 a game and did shoot 64% from the floor overall. He's a 26% three-point shooter, but again, he doesn't take a lot of them. He's a 6'11 forward, has that athleticism, and Giannis is the MVP of the NBA. So again, you know, you can look at the comparisons, but I don't think 78 votes to 23 as far as first place votes are concerned, clearly you can tell why Giannis was the MVP. There was a lot of people that had him up there toward the top. But again, you know, some of the things you look at, now Russell Westbrook has averaged a triple-double 3 years in a row, and the first time he won the MVP, it was like, oh, you got to give it to him because he's the first guy that's averaged a triple-double since Oscar Robertson did it way back in, if I remember right, the 70s. But so that's the sticking point. It's got to go to Russell Westbrook because that happened. But we, you know, push aside the other ones. And the next year it goes to James Harden because it felt he should have won it instead of Russell Westbrook. Kawhi Leonard was in the talk that year as well when he was with the Spurs. And then, you know, Harden wins it last year. Well, Harden wins it last year averaging 30 points a game. His average goes up to 36 points a game and doesn't win it this year, and it's not even close. So obviously it's a year-by-year thing, and I think a lot of the fact of winning it does go into the record that you have as a team. You know, the Rockets last year were the best team in the NBA going into the playoffs with that record as far as that was concerned in the Western Conference. So the Rockets did have that, and James Harden probably had that to his advantage last year. Again, this year they were not the best team in the NBA as far as record was concerned. So Giannis, the best player on the best regular season team record, gets the MVP, and he talked a little bit about thanked his teammates and the Bucks as well in general last night after accepting the award.
I want to thank my team. First of all, I want to thank my teammates. It takes more than one person to win 16 games. Every time I walk to the locker room, I saw my teammates, they were ready to go to fight. They were ready to go to war with me. They laced up their shoes, they went out there and they gave 100%. Okay. I want to thank the coach staff for teaching us, pushing us every day, every single day, believing in us, teaching us what it takes to win. I want to thank the front office, the ownership for, believing in me.
Giannis getting very emotional at the end of that part of his speech there, accepting the MVP award last night. All right, also, other NBA awards from last night, the Defensive Player of the Year, Rudy Gobert from the Jazz, he wins it for the second consecutive season. Gobert is the first player to win Defensive Player of the Year in consecutive seasons since Kawhi Leonard did it for the Spurs 14-15 and 15-16. Before that, Dwight Howard in three straight seasons won from 2008 to 2011. So there's a little bit of a precedent there as far as the two straight Defensive Player of the Year awards for Rudy Gobert again of the Jazz. Mike Budenholzer of the Bucks, the Coach of the Year, and he became the seventh coach in NBA history to win at least 60 games in a season with multiple franchises, as he did that with the Hawks as well. Mike Budenholzer, the Coach of the Year. For the third time in his career, Lou Williams is the Sixth Man of the Year from the Clippers. He's just the second player to win the Sixth Man of the Year three times, joining Jamal Crawford. And also he's joins Kevin McHale and Detlef Schrempf, the only players to win the award in consecutive seasons. Lou Williams, the Sixth Man of the Year. Pascal Siakam is the most improved player, increased his points per game average by 9.7 points a game here this season, and he was named the most improved player and the Rookie of the Year. From the Dallas Mavericks, Luka Doncic is the Rookie of the Year. He's the fifth rookie to average 20-plus points, 5-plus assists, and 5-plus rebounds in a season. And all five of those players also won Rookie of the Year. He beat out DeAndre Ayton and Trae Young for the Rookie of the Year, Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks. So let's look at the NBA awards from last night. And Giannis Antetokounmpo, again, the MVP of the NBA for the 2018-19 season. All right, well, that'll wrap up this part of the Sports Ticket. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll be joined by Riley Gates from GoPowerCat.com as we'll discuss K-State sports with Riley coming up on the Sports Ticket.